matter what people say, we got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the street.
WJMS, this is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beats, to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys have a wonderful weekend and are getting ready for the upcoming week. So on today's show, we are not going to go through our preliminaries. I know, sad. But we have a very special guest who is here with us today, who is going to talk about a very, very important project, movement rather, that she has started. And it's really amazing. I've been following it on social media. The movement is called Belonging, and it addresses sexual violence in the community. And you guys know that, you know, every year I have a Sexual Assault Awareness Month event. Here and there I'll have guests that come on throughout the year to talk about domestic violence, sexual assault violence, harassment, and all sorts of things. Because I truly believe that it's really important for us as a community to address these issues that we for so long have turned the blind eye to, swept under the rug, and just failed to really discuss with, you know, our kids, with our parents, with each other. And so, you know, a lot of times we have people, you know, talk about it, right? They talk the talk, but we don't often see people really walk the walk. And so with this particular movement, it's really interesting because it's a little different from the traditional ways of approaching the topic of sexual violence. Definitely keep it. You don't have to keep it locked for that long. She's about to come on air. But definitely, you know, keep it locked. Stay tuned. It's going to be a pretty in-depth show, you know, a little longer than normal. But I encourage you all to tune in and just to hear, you know, more about the movement, more about our guest, and also ways that you can, you know, become part of the movement, ways that you can support the movement. So next week, you know, we'll be back with our Womp Womp. We'll be back with our Big Up of the Week, etc. But today we are going to engage in a very necessary conversation, very personal conversation with regards to sexual violence and this new approach, really, this new way of addressing it. All right, everyone. I'm here with my very special guest, Laura Jean-Jacques. Laura, say hello.
Hey, everyone.
So today I'm here with my very special friend, my soul sister, to talk about a very important topic within the Black community. I know we've spoken about this on a few occasions on According to RP, sexual assault, especially in the Black community, in the West Indian community. But today is really special because Laura here has a movement, really. It's not an event. I'm not even going to call it an
event.
It's
a movement.
It's a movement called Belonging. Yes. And so she's going to be talking a little bit about what Belonging is. She's going to first talk a little bit about who she is. She's no stranger to the show. She was on the show a couple of months ago. And we were talking
my lungs out.
Yes, yes. But today she's here for a very, very important, I guess, cause, which is sexual assault awareness, particularly in the West Indian Black community. This is an issue that takes place. Obviously, it's global, it's worldwide, it knows no color. But as we were talking offline, within the West Indian community, it seems to have it's like nuanced in a sense.
Yeah.
And so Belonging is a movement that Laura started to, in a sense, not just combat sexual assault awareness, but really, you know, move forward with it in the political forefront, if I may say, you know, policy-wise. Because a lot of times we do these events, we have these panels, we get people together, and we're talking about it, which is good.
Because about the action?
But you know? Where's the action? Yes. So, Laura, tell us a little bit about who you are and what is this Belonging movement?
Okay, so like Rita said, my name is Laura Jean-Jacques, and I am the founder of Alignment Arts, which is a platform that allows creation in terms of concepts, mostly art-related, that speak on behalf of like causes. And so Belonging is a two-day immersive art experience, starting with the story of my life, dealing directly with child sexual abuse, with some physical abuse aspects in it. And the reason why I chose to approach belonging in that concept, because I cannot speak of a story that is not mine. And by using my voice and my experience, I get to create space, allow space, and give way to a movement which is more action-based rather than conversational, right? We talk a lot, but what about doing?
Yeah. And I think that's really important because, you know, in the past few years, I've done a couple of events or yearly events around sexual assault. I think the first one I did was around human trafficking. We had, you know, a panel together talking about that. But at the end of the day, it's really about the action, because we can talk all we want, which again, I think is important, because I think creating a safe space for people to even air out their issues is important. I mean, I find, you know, for me growing up, there wasn't any space really that I could think of that would allow me to talk about any type of trauma, period, whether it be sexual trauma or any type of trauma. So I think having, you know, these conversations are important, but then how many of these conversations can we have before we really start taking action, right?
Yeah.
And so with belonging, you know, I've been seeing the posts on social media. I see that there's an artistic component to it. I feel like with this generation, it definitely will connect.
Yes.
So I guess in coming up with the, I guess the idea of belong, like how did you come up with the name? Like how did that even come about?
So there's a couple things. I had some questions in like who Laura Jean-Jacques was, right? And when I thought about it, I thought of me being a creative, passionate, authentic leader. Mm-hmm. And with using those three words as a starting or reference point, I was able to tap into the idea of belonging and then working really thoroughly and intentionally through the concept of belonging. I do have a really great supportive team behind me. But it just meant originally started off with like, where am I at? Where's my place after, dealing with trauma like head on? And a lot of it was, you know, I get to find my place where I get to create my space. And with belonging, I'm creating a space that's different. But I'm also creating a space to tell other people, like, not only is it safe space, cause I also feel like that the use of safe space is so overly used at this point, you know, like
it's cliche.
And what does it mean to allow people to discover what belonging looks like, whether they're 5 or whether they're 75, specifically after dealing with sexual trauma. And I think the only perspective in which I could speak from was just like my sexual trauma, which I started finding out was actually relatable. I went to all girls high school. I have all sisters, and after like, you know, interacting and socializing and you get to talking and having like these deep conversations, you start realizing like, oh my god, like, oh, you went through rape, I did. Oh, you were molested, I was molested. Oh my god, my this person in my family did this. Oh, you know what, this colleague did this. And I was just like, you know, these threads are interweaved between us, but very common. But I just wanted to take a very creative approach to deliver that message. And that message is like, yes, we get to be intentional about what this conversation looks like, but we get to even be more intentional about what the action steps looks like. We can't just keep talking and opening organizations and then it stops. You know what I mean? And so part of it was just like, how do the call of action, how do I get to create a call of action that looks so different that people are like, you know,
you got to be part of it.
Yeah. Like I can't ignore this.
Yeah.
You know, and I get to be uncomfortable, you know, and that's the whole point. Like it's not uncomfortable in a negative sense of the word. It's just like, oh crap, like it's in my face. And I think like when I look at an activist or a voice that's so loud in the advocacy work that's happening, I think of Sean King.
Mm-hmm.
Sean King is just like, you are going to see this and you're going to look at it and you're going to listen to it and you're not going to ignore it. Because the only thing that you have left to do after this is to take action. And what does that look like? And it could be in different forms, from funding to holding a space differently to different forms of like what action looks like. And for me, I think there are like post-belonging conversations taking place right now before even the experience has started, right? Like what's happening after belonging? And that's also a strategy that's being put in place. But I think for me, it's just like, we don't get to sit around and pretend like this is not happening. Mm-hmm. Or we don't get to water it down. And we also get to sit in vulnerability. I think that's another part of belonging. How do I create space in which vulnerability is power and not weakness?
Yeah. And I think that's really important because, you know, as we were talking offline, like, it's, again, I will say that very often throughout this segment, but I find that, you know, when it's funny because when I met you a couple of years ago, I don't know what it is, maybe because we're clairvoyant sisters, we're of the spirit world.
We're kindred spirits.
I remember like you had opened up to me and you were talking about, you know, just, you know, sexual assault trauma. And you were like, you know, you had started like, I think coming out, being more open about it. And people were just like saying, like, it happened to me too. Mm-hmm. And I remember when you told me that, it stuck in my mind and I'm like, this woman doesn't even really know me like that, but she felt comfortable enough to talk to me and we were engaging. And I'm like, it would be a beautiful thing if people felt that it was okay to not just talk about it, but to move forward, to figure out, well, what solutions can come from this. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this belonging thing has been in the works like from day one, from the moment you realize that other people are, you know, other people who are professional working individuals are experiencing the trauma, they're reliving their trauma, whether it happened 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever, that they were going through this trauma and nobody was really doing anything about it. Yeah. And I think that
I think a lot of people, and it's not to cast judgment, right? Or like typecast, I guess, but you got a lot of people that talk a good talk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk a good talk, right? And also like when I look at belonging and even alignment arts, right? The platform in which it sits on, it's not a one thing. It's not a one-time thing. It's mm-hmm. not a protest that's for a week and then it disappears and it fades away into the background. It's like you get to actually address this because oftentimes it's swept under the rug, or like what we talked about off the record, you mm-hmm. know, how certain things are just so watered down where people don't even feel called to even address it, even as they're personally experiencing it.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, who's going to give a shit anyway? And that's not what it should be about, but it's come to the point where like you're watching, as a survivor of sexual violence, like you're watching on TV shaming and blaming, and mm-hmm. you're like, how does this still exist in 2019?
Yeah.
And that's where I think the conversation shifts to like, what does advocacy and policy work look like when it comes to that through art form?
And I think it's very interesting because you find when we think about advocacy in today's age, right? It's very like, it's very specific. We know you want to advocate, you want to, you know, lobby, you got to go through your senators, you got to go through your politicians, you got to, you know, write a bill, you got, I don't know. It's like very like structured.
Yeah, systematic.
But thinking about it in artistic form, I think is really, you know, intriguing in a sense, because it does attract that like, huh, what is this? Mm-hmm. You know, how can I get involved in this? Whether you like art or not, it's a different form of advocacy that people are not so, I guess, accustomed to. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that might be a very effective way, because people are tired of the traditional forms of advocacy.
Delivery of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, so, okay, fine. You're going to write a bill, send it to Albany, whatever. Like, what is that really going to do for me and the future generations of little girls, little boys, whatever, that are being sexually assaulted by parents, by uncles, by cousins?
Know nothing about that process, right? Yeah. I think if anything, belonging becomes like a bridge in between both, like the artistic expression, and like policy and advocacy work that has to exist. Like, government is going absolutely nowhere. Like, yes, we get to change the landscape of it and who's in office and more progressive voices within government. That's not going anywhere. So how do we bridge those that feel so far from like the experiences that the average person goes through every day? And I think that that's partly what I'm doing through belonging as well. And I think that the reason why I call it art experience is because it's a form of artistic expression. But I don't want people to think like they're going to an art exhibit.
Yeah, like a museum or exhibit. Yeah.
And then this is why I also was explaining off the record was that it's an experiential learning process. And people are called to do things that they're going to be like, whoa. Okay. I either do this or I don't. But when I choose not to do this, what does that mean? You know, how is that, you know, showing up for me? You know, like what do I then get to look at because I'm choosing to not do this? Or what does it mean that I'm choosing to do this, you know, and then following through with that.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your experience then, because obviously belonging is out there. When we all attend the show and you're going to give the information for the I guess this is a 2-day event, correct?
Yes.
You know, what, so I understand the idea behind it, you know, combating, in a sense, sexual assault, bringing awareness to it, and then also, like, in a sense, finding a solution to how do we prevent this within our communities. But obviously, you know, anybody would ask, well, what really led to this? Like, what was the experience that you had that caused you now to want to start belonging?
Okay. So I think one of the first steps that sparked, I wouldn't say it sparked, right? So belonging has been there. Like what you said, you met me 2 years ago. I was just like, oh, I saw it 2 years ago. But I think it's been something I've been sitting on since probably high school. You know, through being re-traumatized when it came out to like my mom without my consent, right? And that was through a shared experience from one of my siblings who I hadn't even communicated my own experience. So she was going through her own experience, which happened to mirror mine. But I think belonging in terms of the concept of the immersive experience just came through like continuous like healing work. I think oftentimes like people think like, oh, you make peace with it, get over it, like what we were talking about, right? And that's not true. Like, to heal from trauma or to heal from anything that might shift you a little bit is continuous work. And I think in the age that I'm in right now, I got to make a choice of like what that process looked like now. You know, and it didn't look in the form of like crying and journaling. It looked like I get to go bigger because this is something that I get to create, but also like I get to basically like start working on like what does a different form of healing look like through my personal experience while I am alive. I think a lot of people die with secrets and they die with trauma and they die with so much pain. I don't get to do that. And I would hope that other people don't get to do that. So it's really like, for those that have never had that conversation within like their families, their homes, their circles, part of it is just like, one of my friends put it as like, oh, you're creating a healing vortex.
I like the word vortex.
You know, and yes. I said, ooh, that was great. And, you know, she basically explained like, you're creating a healing vortex where people get to come into this place and be triggered and maybe relive some of their trauma. Like, I had someone earlier that smelled the scent of a candle and was just like, oh my God, this just reminded me of this person. And I remembered as a young girl, like smelling a certain cologne. Like, there's a cologne called Creed that may be dating me a little bit.
I mean, listen, we all out here just trying to live our lives.
Life be life.
I mean, you know, we age like fine wine. So.
Yes. And I remember like being triggered by scent for a little bit. And, you know, the point is be triggered, but triggered doesn't have to also look negative.
Yeah.
And coming into that space, knowing that there's tools and there's resources to help them work through that triggering and the trauma and to come out of there, like either starting their healing journey or closing one aspect of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And also knowing that it's continuous work on different levels and it's past like just self-healing. And so that's why in the description, I say we get to heal as a collective because yet again, we're going through trauma and attempting to heal in isolation.
And it doesn't work because I feel like if it worked, then we would all be fine.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
Why isn't this being addressed as a collective experience? And it is. And it may not look identical, but there's so, like I say, to go back to like the common thread that's like weave, like that's common. Sexual violence is so common that it's normalized right now in our communities. Like, what are you talking about? Like, okay, that happened to me. Okay, cool, whatever. Actually, it's not.
But that's what it's made, you know, that's how we're made to feel. And it's funny because when we were talking prior, we were talking about comparison. And I think that's why some people also are kind of like, well, whatever. Like, you know, well, yeah, you know, I was just touched. I wasn't penetrated. So it wasn't that big of a deal. And I think that a lot of that comes from the West Indian culture, the Black culture. Let me not just say West Indian culture, because I have a lot of friends who are Black American who would share similar stories about how their uncle or, you know, their nephew, friend or whatever, or, you know, somebody in their family or the friend of a friend of the family would, you know, take advantage of them. And the family would know that this is the creepy uncle. This is the creepy. Yeah, he's the creepy relative. Everybody knew what he did, but he was still able to sit at the kitchen table or sit at the dinner table with everybody else. I don't know if you saw the show or the series Greenleaf. Yeah, with Oprah, I guess, or on the OWN channel.
I only made it past season one.
Yeah, I watched, I'm like a glutton for punishment. I watch all these things, and I watched all the seasons. But, you know, Uncle Mac, who was the character of, you know, the individual who was raping children in the church, raping, you know, one of the sisters of, I forgot, Grace Greenleaf, her sister, that ended up committing suicide. Because of just going through that trauma and going through that abuse and nobody saying anything. And then funny enough, years later, several years later, when the one of the daughters confronted Uncle Mac, her own mother, who's the sister of Uncle Mac, was just like, what are you talking about? Like, you're lying. Like, this is not true. Although you could tell, you know, that she knew. And it was funny because later on in the show, it was revealed that she was, I think, abused by her father. So it's kind of like what you're saying. It's a cyclical thing. It's normal. And I was telling you, like, you know, one of my aunts was just like, oh, girl, everybody, all the women in your family have been abused. Like, this is not.
And I guess for me, it may be naive to think about it, but that doesn't get to be that conversation anymore.
No, I mean, I don't even think it's about naive. I think you're right.
No, I mean, yeah, it gets to be disruption, and you get to be uncomfortable. Period.
Like, you can't sit at the dinner table.
You don't get to sit at this table right now.
Talking about pass the biscuits. Like,
exactly.
You don't get to do
pass
that.
The biscuits after Gracie just told you what happened. You get to say, like, oh, my God, there's these things in place that I can actually take action right now besides statutory rape, you know, legislation. Besides, like, you, there gets to be other things in place that doesn't allow that conversation where it's just like swept under the rug.
Yeah.
We don't get to be those type of people anymore. And you know what? I'm thankful because of the climate in which we're at, because like now there's, you can't hide from that, you know? And I remember watching the news with that, I forgot his name, where he was calling about like how racism is like who we are, like this racist ugliness is who we've always been. It's the kind of like pacifying and hiding it that's the problem. Actually, that's always been our culture. But when you're hiding and acting like, oh, it...
like it's okay. Like it's... like,
you know, you think shame, it's a rite of passage. Also shameful, but... no, like, this is ugliness that we get to address. But then we get to actually do something about it besides the tradition.
Calling it out.
Calling it out. What are we doing? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Because guess what? Another kid right now is going home. Facing that with their own parents.
Yeah.
With their uncles, with the next door neighbor, with the downstairs neighbor like me.
And I think that's the part that's scary, because it was only a couple of years ago I was translating in the Sex Crimes Bureau with a young Haitian girl. And this happens a lot where, you know, the parents are estranged. The young girl was in Haiti with her mother. Her father was in the U.S. She had never met her father. The father, you know, summoned for her so that I guess he could give her a residency and I guess at one point U.S. citizenship. So she's living in a household with a father and sisters who she never really knew. And I'm not sure if the father had abused the other sisters. It's clear to me that he must have. But this young girl who was in high school, went to Erasmus High School, which apparently has a very high rate of this situation happening.
I mean, it's predominantly immigrant.
Yeah. The young girl, she told me, she was like, you know, when she came, the father was raping her, like sexually, like penetrating her, not even just fingering her or whatever, like sexually penetrating her. She tried to tell her sisters. Her sisters were like, you're not going to mess this up for us. Like, where would we go if we're not here? So you're going to keep your mouth shut. I don't remember if it was a social worker at the school who then eventually, like, you know, called the police. And so that's how the DA's office got involved. But when I met with the girl, she was just like, I have nobody on my side. She's like, my siblings are telling me if I mess this shit up, they're going to like jump me. Like they're going to send me back to Haiti. They're like, we don't care what he's doing to you. You're not messing up our lifestyle right here. And it was really sad for me to hear that, because she was just, in her mind, she's traumatized. Because she's just like, this is my father. Yeah, I never met him before, but you're my blood. Like, you can do this to me.
It was part of, like, my birth process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're okay. Like, you're okay. Like, forget that you're my father. I'm underage. Like, you're raping me. And you expect me to not say anything. But at the end of the day, her situation was her situation. Her sisters, her siblings were not standing up for her. They were like, you're not messing this up for us. And she ended up not moving forward with the charges and went back to the environment. And it's like, this was only a couple of years ago. Like, this is happening, like, right now.
In 2019.
And it's crazy. And it's like, where is the advocacy for these, especially for these young transplants, right? When they come here and they have nobody and they're like, the church knows that people are, you know.
And keep in mind, like, they're also coming from that in their countries, right?
So they're somewhat used to it.
Yeah, and so that might be norm, even over there. But it's a little bit different than here. Here we're saying, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
Over there, they're like, well, this is necessary in order for you to get from poverty to maybe a little bit of something on your plate to then making sure that your parents eat, oh, and the six other siblings that you have that might die.
Yeah.
If you don't
get in line. And that's the part of it, I think, that even in our generation, you know, living here in the U.S. who, you know, weren't born there or whatever it was, it's crazy that it's still something that's normalized. Like, we don't speak about it. And I think a lot of times it's not because we're necessarily even like afraid to. It's because we have this idea, well, who's going to care? We're told that it's normal. Everybody's done. Like, why are you even mentioning this? It happened to me too. Get over it. Why are we talking about it? It's like, at what point do we move past that?
I think that's like a percentage of people, but I think that it's painful. Some people don't want to be in that. Pain is not comfortable. And then you have a lot of people that don't have the tools on how to deal with pain. So to avoid that feeling, they just don't want to acknowledge it. I mean, I'm experiencing that right now,
mm-hmm.
right? And not personally with myself, but people who are not too happy
mm-hmm.
with me coming out with this. And it's not because they are not aware that the experience is real. It's a painful reminder, and it's a triggering thing for
yeah.
them. And my call is like, please come and be triggered and face your trauma, and let's start the healing work. And let's also do the advocacy work behind it that doesn't look like, oh, you know, not to downplay anything, because I feel like a lot of the spaces in which that were made safe for me to come out were like in panel mm-hmm. discussions. But I'm also saying like that way of showing up in something that's still so prominent in our communities.
It's not enough.
Not effective anymore.
It's not enough. So in what ways, aside from the advocacy, in what ways are you working to, I guess, provide support or to point to where the support would be? Because you mentioned there are people who just don't want to be re-traumatized, right? Yeah. Like, so, like for me, my go-to for anything in life, trauma, whatever, is to repress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I repressed things that were traumatic for me when I was a child.
Yeah.
And so, because I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to think about it because I don't want to have to feel. And so that's my mode. That's how I move, right? But obviously, we know that, you know, you're like a bottle, right? You're going to bust at some point. So you have to address it at some point. You have to address the trauma.
And not only bust, like, you die with that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it causes disease. People are dying of cancer. They don't know where the cancer is coming from. It's no trauma. Family history. It is trauma, which is why it is important,
yeah.
you know, to get people to start to release that tension, yeah. right? What kind of support,
in a sense? Through the actual two-day immersive experience, there's a percentage of proceeds going towards a nonprofit that helps youth and young people deal with trauma actively. Mm-hmm. I haven't publicized the name because we're working out what that would look like
mm-hmm.
to further their cause. And so, like I said, it's a much bigger conversation. This is not just about my personal story, but I have to start from me.
Yeah.
In order to make way. I think also, like, there's an organization that does a lot of transformation work and healing work. That will also be present at this experience. And just like also providing tools. What I also say is just like, I'm not also saying like, don't get counseling, right?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I did get counseling in high school. And so like also providing tools. Not everyone handles trauma the same way.
Yeah.
You know,
so different.
Yeah. And so like, I'm not going to say that a person's going to walk in and be healed and they're trauma free. A person may walk in and say, oh my God, like I went back to like 1973
mm-hmm.
and now the wound is open. And so like, yes, there's definitely like, people in place and organizations in place to be able to provide additional support for those that will need it. You know, you think of it as like, you know, some of these shows in which like these people are facing like intense situations and mm-hmm. like, well, we have, you know, counselors on site and we have, you know, these resources available to you. But they're immediate and they're attainable and they're reachable right there on premises, you know? So it's not like, oh, follow through and call 1-800 and, you know, whatever. It's more so like this person's actually here on premises. So if you want to begin that work, they're here.
Mm-hmm.
And what that looks like. So I would say like that's a part of it. And then the rest is just like what the conversation looks afterwards and then what the action steps need to look like, which have already started. So
okay.
I'm not going into further detail
yeah.
because it, you know, certain things, you know, you're working with different moving parts, but I think that if people would take the opportunity to come and walk through this journey with me and several other participants. And the reason why I'm not using the word artist is because artist is very limiting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get to say creator, and participants, because, it's really special. And I think that, I have yet to see, and it's not bragging, But I have yet to go to an immersive art experience and see something like this.
Well, I haven't seen it. And I'd be in these streets.
Yeah.
I'd be in these streets. If I'm not physically in the streets, my ears are to the streets. Yeah. And I haven't seen it put like this before. You know, like I said, I've been a part of the movement for a while. I know the organizations. I've, you know, done the discussions. But in terms of the artistic sense, I've never seen it merged before. And I think that that has a very powerful, powerful way of touching people in ways that a regular conversation won't, whether there's, you know, even if there is action items after that conversation, I think this immersive experience is going to be very intriguing.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need that level of intrigue in order to really, you know, bring awareness. Sometimes people just have to be intrigued. They have to be like, you know, psyched in a sense to be like, oh, what is this? And then really delve into it.
Yeah. I think that what makes belonging so amazing is that I'm not walking through that journey by myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've spoken to countless of survivors. I have quite a few people that are still in this trauma. And that's why I keep saying, like, you don't get to walk through this by yourself. But then I also get to say, like, what does that support looks like for you? Rather than saying, oh, you know, here's what's available to you.
And yeah.
Like, where is that? It's like what they say, meet someone where they're at.
Yeah.
And I think that's also what I'm doing, but also with like a huge component of it is like call to action. What are we doing?
And I think that's important. You know, like I said, even for me, like, you know, I do a lot. I like think tanks. I'm a think tank person because I feel like, yeah, it's great to have a conversation, but like, what are the action items afterwards? And it's really important for people to feel like there's going to be steps taken afterwards, especially for people who are either newly, you know, reintroducing themselves to their trauma, as I like to call it. Because again, you know, if people are like me, repressed, and you're just haunted at night, you know what I mean? And sometimes you have to be reintroduced to your trauma for you to feel like, okay, something has to be done. Right.
I think when I think of, the effectiveness of belonging, I think of like when I speak to someone who is a survivor of sexual trauma, that it's not this thing coming out through like in between like clenched teeth, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't want to use the words like say it loud and say it proud, but say it so loud that you don't feel shame or guilt when it comes out your mouth. Because oftentimes that's what it looks like.
Well, I mean, but that's what it is, because I think, again, when we're talking about society, when we're talking about culture, there's so many, it's so normalized where it's not just
ashamed. There's still a lot of shame around it.
There's a lot of shame around it. And then it's not just that there's a lot of shame around it. It's like, suck it up. Like, it's not like this is nor like, what are you doing? Like, okay, fine, great. You were touched. I was raped. So what? You know what I mean? So it's like there's so many different components as to like how people are trying to process. And I think that with having a movement like belonging, it's, you know, sometimes it's important to have like a face of a young person who's within the same demographic, within the same generation, saying enough is enough. You know, I know I'm not the only person that's going through this. I know many people have gone through this. Like, it's like I'm speaking up and you can too.
Yeah. And I'm also saying like the conversation has been happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not unaware of those who are around me that have gone through
that. Yeah.
And I also get to say that that gets to be a part of our story, but it doesn't get to define us. But like, what else?
Yeah. And that's the part that I think people are missing. It's okay. You gave me a round table to talk, but what are we going to do about it? How do I prevent, you know, like with me, I'm a parent of a child. Like, how do I prevent myself? Like, how do I put myself at ease as a parent? You know, it might never happen to my child, but I'm walking around here paranoid as hell because I know what my life was like.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how do we move forward to a new era where this is not like the thing at the forefront of our mind with our own kids or grandkids?
Yeah. I think like I had someone else that was expressing like their personal experience of like rape. And being raised by a single mom who actually believed her story, and how it's even come to the point where her and her young children, like, there's things that she's facing pushback with her whole family, because she's so traumatized and it's still so fresh for her that her children don't get to experience what I guess average children these days would experience, like spending quality time with extended family, right?
Well, that's something that's very prominent, you know, within a lot of my family members, and even with myself.
Yeah.
You know,
like you don't get to sleep over this person.
No, I don't. I wasn't allowed to have sleepovers. And then when things were like, oh, you can't go over your aunt's house because she has a husband. Like for me, I'm like, I don't understand. What do you mean I can't sleep over my aunt's house because she has a husband? He's my uncle. Like, why can't I? And, you know, I feel like that's exactly what you're talking about. Like, kids are not allowed to be kids. We're not allowed to have sleepovers with our cousins because our parents are afraid that our cousins are going to violate us. Our aunts are going to violate us, our uncles.
And so I guess for me, it's just like, what would protocol look like? Or what would policy work look like?
Yeah.
If we thought about those moments, that's not like those moments are so innocent, but could turn so it could be so traumatizing.
Yeah.
And, what do we put in place in those moments? And that's not something that's, you know, to call 911 when there's an emergency.
Yeah, there's no real protocol. There's no real system.
Besides going to school, what if that child is being molested through the weekend?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a Saturday. Where are they going? What principal are they going to report to? What mandated reporter are they going to within their educational, academic environment to tell the story?
But then the other thing,
the experience
too, is that I find that parents a lot of times are really good at, not parents, but family members, whatever, are good at threats, right? So now you tell the child, oh, you go and make this report, you're going to be in a foster system. You're going to be, you know, away from mommy and daddy. And then the foster system, they're going to rape you in the foster system, which is a reality as well, too. Mm-hmm. So it's like the child now at a young age is making this like determination. Do I stick with the devil that I do know or stick with, you know, or go to a devil that I don't know? And it, and that, you know, further perpetuates not just that sexual trauma, but just like so many other issues that manifest.
I think even if I think back on my experience and, you know, I don't feel the need to explain myself, right? But I think of like my younger self and like what may have gone through my mind at that age. And I had two working immigrant parents, young, you know, working and trying to survive, like I said, in some of like the posts, like in a country that wasn't theirs and that did not like them. I mean, growing up in like the 80s and the 90s in New York City was disgusting. You know what I mean? Like where you had to even deny like where you were from just to survive. And, you know, to know that that's what they were experiencing. But like I had to think of like, you know, even like facing physical abuse within my household and what may have stopped me from coming forward. And I think that there's children enough that are so aware that they are literally thinking about those things. And then you go into your coping mechanism, you know, of like whether it's numbing out or blacking out and your memory coming back. You know, I do have that. You know, I think a lot of us who have been traumas of sexual violence or whatever violence, you learn to cope. And sometimes as you pretend like that shit does not exist. And then you'll face it later on in life, you know. And I think of like all these, you know, like when you think of like what could it mean to be parenting a child that is going through that trauma, and how does trauma show up where like it can go under the radar, because the kids are giving all these, going through these thought processes of like what you said, what are the repercussions of like my actions or my me coming forward with something so detrimental that it could literally change the whole outlook of my life.
And it's scary.
Yeah, it's very scary. And I think that this is a big ask, right? This is a this is something, and I said it before, and I know I've repeated a couple of times here, but like it's so much bigger that I get to do that work to figure out what that is. And I have so much support and people waiting like, what we got to do right now?
And I think that's what's important, because I think a lot of people who have ventured on this path of bringing awareness to sexual assault, sexual violence, you know, where they haven't become as successful in a sense, in quotation, in air quotes, as others is because of the lack of support. They might have the vision, it's they have scary. The idea, but it's like sometimes people just don't want to, even with the supporters, some people don't want to like attach their, like, listen, I hear your story and I believe you, but I don't want to be on record as being somebody who's, you know, supporting or moving forward with sexual assault, sexual violence, anything like that. Because there's still like a weird taboo on it, in a sense. Like, although that there is the Me Too movement, there's so many other movements out there that are bringing awareness to sexual harassment. I did an anti-harassment training at my job the other day, just focusing on sexual harassment and other types of harassment. But it's like, even with all of those, like, you know, policies and safeguards in place, it still does it for me. I'm always concerned about, you know, those of us who had been Trump, we're still living through the trauma, but we're traumatized and trying to move forward, as opposed to, yes, we need to put policies in place for those to prevent, you know, trauma from happening to our kids and to our friends, family, whatever. But it's like, how do we, you know, support the people who have been traumatized, and helping them moving forward and either sharing their story or just seeking assistance or support for them?
And I think, like, that's the work. Because that might look different for you than it does for me. And I think that's where conversations are necessary. But like, it's like you're reading a bunch of personal development books, right? But if you're not really applying what you're reading, what sense does it make to even read that
book? Exactly.
It's the same thing. Like, okay, you can't, like, some conversations are so repetitive at this point.
Yeah. How many more roundtables can you have on a particular topic?
But like, yes, the conversation is the awareness aspect of it. What's the action part? And I think that's where I'm doing the work, right? And I'm digging deeper and I'm willing to ruffle feathers and make people uncomfortable, make myself uncomfortable. And this is what I was telling somebody earlier. You think I'm comfortable? Do you think like with the process in which I'm doing right now, being the poster child of belonging is comfortable?
Yeah.
Then I could just cruise through this whole entire experience. That's not what it is. You know, like, it gets to be like where we're asking ourselves, like, what else? What more? Because I think, like, as human beings going through this experience, we get to kind of, like, push ourselves past the point to say, like, when I leave here one day, the work can continue without me. And what does that work look like? It's a constant process, right? Like, it may look one way a month from now, and then 5 years from now, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Society shifts too. And I think for me, I'm looking to shift the conversation, the action steps, and what it looks like. And if that means like partnering with amazing organizations, partnering with government officials, working on what does like progressive legislation look like? Mm-hmm. What does progressive policies look like? You know, because we're progressing in like technology and going to Mars and we're doing all these things, but we can't solve like sexual trauma.
Yeah. Gun violence.
Gun violence?
Crazy.
I'm just saying, like, so we're going like left, so far left that the thing that's in front of us, like, we can't, like, how are we not addressing? How haven't we come close to solving this issue? And listen, I'm not in the mindset that we will come at 100%, right? But I'm saying, like, can we at least get close to it?
Well, I think it's because a lot of the policy makers are predators. I mean, look at our president. I mean, I have to say, I mean, that we call him Agent Orange, whatever he want, but unfortunately, he is the president of the United States talking about grabbing women by their pussies. So when you have leadership at the highest level, you know, being predators, it that's where I think you start to see, like, there's an agenda to continue this sexual violence, right? This human trafficking of young girls, because the senators, the officials, they have their sex trafficking agent bringing in young girls or young boys or whatever it is to them. So there's, I feel like, there is, you know, although, you know, we're trying to push and we're trying to break these barriers, but a lot of what I think is holding us back is because, you know, the same policymakers we seek to be on our side to move forward with these agendas are the ones who have their own personal sick agenda And, you know, and I think that's where it becomes a little difficult. But I think in mobilizing, you know, and there's number in, or the strength in numbers. I've always believed that. I've always said that. And as long as there's an organized front to move forward, whether it be the policy making, lobbying, or whatever the case is, I think that that's where we'll start to, you know, see some change at least, right?
And I'm very open to that possibility. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I think we all get to the work. Just this specific focus is sexual violence.
So with belonging, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what is it exactly? You know, where can we find it? When is it happening? Okay. What's the movement?
So belonging, it's a 2-day immersive art experience focused on ending sexual violence.
Okay.
It's happening August 29th and August 30th. There'll be daily viewing slots at 7 p.m. to about 8:30. You get about an hour and a half to 2 hours to view this and partake in this experience. And then we have the opening celebration happening on the 29th. And then we have the closing celebration happening on the 30th.
Okay, and where is this all taking place?
So it's taking place at Recess Art, which is on 46 Washington Avenue. They are also a local nonprofit that provides access to quality art space and art opportunities to youth under representative youth. So I'm very aware that the artists that's learning certain skill sets in their labs are potential, like, you know, victims of sexual assault. And so it's been great finding a space that's actually in alignment with what the calling for belonging is.
And this is in Brooklyn, New York?
Yes. It's where the space is actually right up the block from the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
It's
right
cool.
off the BQE, major transportation.
It's funny, when I saw Recess, you know, because on Instagram you can like set your location to be like, you know, Wakanda or whatever. Yeah. I was like, oh, Recess. I'm like, okay, I can see where this comes into play with her theme.
You got it. Because it was like, so there's a childlike element. You know, the person that's on these flyers and posters is me, right? Reenacting what it would mean to be 5 years old. And so recess, you know, the part in school in which you felt the most free, right? You knew that when that bell rang after lunch, it was a recess, right? And there's going to be a lot of like playful childlike themes running throughout that experience, you know, to tap into that. And so, but that space is extra special. It is 2 days, each day is actually different. So in the description of the event, we actually encourage, you know, our attendees to experience both days. Also, you know, when it comes to like, I've had people ask several times, like, can children come? Yeah, of course children can come. You get to be a responsible adult in their life to say, you know, are we willing to maybe have a conversation after this? Or am I willing to, you know, be responsible enough to bring a child that's under 18 into the space, but I won't limit it to who has access to it.
Is there a cost associated with the exhibit?
So the daily cost is $45.
Okay.
Like I said, a percentage of the proceeds will be going to a nonprofit specifically working towards ending sexual violence. There is a you know, package deal if you want to experience both days, because it's, you know, according to RP, I do have a promotional code that attendees or those who are interested in purchasing tickets can use, which would be Belonging Friends at checkout, and you'll get 15% off your total. That's excluding donations.
Okay, cool.
We also do have a donations tab that wouldn't qualify as a general admissions ticket, but you will get nourished.
Amen.
Which is also a whole different concept in itself, because I think some of the things that have come up for me when it's come to like food and, you know, being like, you know, not particularly my experience, but like how poverty could be directly linked to inappropriate incidents for children can easily take a child from being hungry to sex trafficking, and how that poverty is directly linked to so many things.
Oh yeah.
And so the food aspect of this experience is so important. And so you will be nourished, you'll be fed, and I believe that you will have a transformative experience through belonging.
I mean, it sounds like it from here.
Yeah.
I like According to our RP exclusive, so I will definitely be posting it on my According to RP page on Gmail. So for those of you who didn't quite get it, either send me a DM or I'll be posting it, you know, up until the actual event. Mm-hmm. Only on According to RP. So if you guys have not subscribed yet, do it now so you can get the discount. But I'm definitely excited. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make it the 30th because I have a wedding pulling me away. But I will be there on the 29th.
Day one.
I will be there on the 29th.
You know, so I think what I was also speaking to you earlier was just like, you know, I'm looking to really transform the lives of 5,000 people.
Yeah,
and I think it's amazing. You know, it's stretched me a lot further than I thought I could. It's helped me to even deal with trauma that I thought I had
dealt with.
Right? And, I'm just excited for what this is, and what it could be and what that legacy of belonging looks like after I'm gone, you know, and after we're all gone. And
well, I mean, I know when I saw it, at first I was like, what is this movie? I'm like, Laura's always up to something. when I saw it, I was like, I know what this is. I know exactly what this is.
What did you think?
I mean, because we've had prior conversations and I'm like, she's ready to be out and talk about her personal experiences and try to transform lives, like you said, you know, and create not just a platform for people to come forward and to, you know, I guess acknowledge the trauma, but like, what are the next steps? What are the next steps to dealing with it? So I was really happy when I saw it. And that's why I commented under one of your pictures. I'm like, you're so brave, because coming from, again, the community that we come from, I mean, West Indians, West Indian, but the Haitian community, we all know
what?
it's a different subsect within the West Indian culture. And
why do you think that is?
I mean, we have such a rich history, but I think it's also a destructive history in a sense, in terms of, you know, after 1804, just the mentality. Because I'm thinking about my grandmother, you know, Lord rest her soul. When I remember one time I was younger and she was talking to me and she was like, you know, she was a dark skinned woman, but she, you know, I think her grandmother was, or her mother was mulatto. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just to see like how these isms really affected like our matriarchs in our, you know, in our community. Mm. And I'm like, if these women who we all consider to be backbones of the community had these types of insecurities and who ate so much shit, whether it be the sexual abuse that we all know that they went through, whether they said it or not, you know, the colorism and all the poverty, infidelity, all this extra stuff, being orphaned at early ages, not being able to continue education and be educated and having to be in the streets doing what they needed to do. It's like, and again, every culture, I believe, experiences a level of that, but there's something different about the Haitian people, right? With their resiliency, just dating back from our independence, that I feel somehow colors the way that we view life, we engage with each other, we approach things in general. I think that extra paprika, whatever that was sprinkled.
Piquenis.
The pima that was sprinkled, you know, on us. I think, you know, because we're such a resilient people, that's why it's so easy to be like, suck it up. This happened to you. You still have to go to work tomorrow.
What can't you get through right now?
Yeah. You still have kids to take care of. You still have a business to run. You still have life to live. It happened to you. It sucks. Get over it. And I think, and I feel like even with myself in other aspects of my life, that's what rings through my head. Get over it. And like, I mean, I've been to therapy. I have a therapist now who's been consistent because I like him. But every time, like, you know, they'll finally have a conversation with me, they're just like, what the hell? Like, how are you like alive? Like, why do you talk so that's my criticism, or their criticism of me. You're so nonchalant about your trauma and your experiences. I'm like, well, that's life. Like, what do you want me to do about it? I still have to pay my bills. Like, I don't have time to sit here and think about shit. And you know, I'll go through the list. I'm like, yeah, and then this happened, and then this person died, and then, yeah, that person, whatever. And they're like, you tell it as if it's like a story.
You're desensitized.
And that, yeah, I'm a very, like, I had somebody, like, die the other day. I'm like, yeah, they died of, like, cancer. They died of whatever. My friend was just like, she's crying listening to me talk about it. She's like, how are you talking about it? I'm like, I've been going to funerals since I was 6 of friends. So I'm like, this is normal for me. But that's how I live. But I feel like a lot of Haitians, desensitization is, like, part of our upbringing, part of our culture. And it's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. At all. I agree that it's not
good. A coping mechanism. And I think you spoke about it, again, off the record, right? Mm-hmm. Off air, about what coping mechanisms look like.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of them, like the numbing out. The more you don't feel, the better you are.
Yeah.
Off.
And ignorance is bliss is my motto.
And the more you're able to function so that you can survive. But like, what about living? Like, what does it mean to like be living while acknowledging like your trauma?
Well, I think that's the issue. A lot of us survive. We don't live.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm learning, even at this tender chicken age of 35.
Okay.
But that's what I'm learning, that it's not about surviving. I've had to survive all my life. I've been in survival mode. I don't think I know what it is to actually like live. And there's a difference. And I don't think, I'm now realizing that, oh, there is a difference.
But I think it goes back to like, in order for you to like understand like what living is, which is like what I'm doing now, right? Is to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
What do vulnerable conversations look like?
We're afraid to be vulnerable because we're afraid.
Because it's looked at as weakness and it's actually not.
Yeah. It's weak. It's power. Seen as weak. It's not, and unfortunately, it's not characterized as power unless
I think that kind of connects like you were saying, the Haitian community, right?
Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to be weak in the Haitian community.
Yeah, and weak in the Haitian community is vulnerability when that's actually not what it is.
Yeah,
what it is so many of people within our communities were vulnerable at one point and were shamed, shut down, re-traumatized, and we don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
But
we're tired of being in that space.
What if there was a new possibility put out through belonging on what vulnerability gets to look like now?
Yeah.
And that you don't get to walk through this experience and be shamed. And you get to say, oh my God.
And you can process.
I get to process and I get to be in this and I don't get to be judged and I don't get to get shut down and I don't get to be told that I'm lying and who are you? Mm-hmm. You asked for it. Oh my God, you're fast. Oh my God, you're this.
You wore that short skirt.
Or you know what? Mm-hmm. You were coming off gay anyway.
Yeah. You had tendencies.
Yeah, tendencies in quotations.
They love to point out the tendencies.
Yeah.
Oh, you had your hand on your hip as a boy.
Oh, the tendencies.
It's over.
Oh, you wore your mother's shoes at one time and the pearls. You know what I mean? Like imagine that you get to walk through an experience in which none of that shit matters.
That sounds like a beautiful life.
And then you get to see what living is, and living can be messy. It'll start off that way, but we get to like approach it so different right now. And I'm really, that's where my mind is at. You know, it's taken like how many minutes we've been talking, but you know, that's really what it is. You know what I mean? To walk through like saying like, oh my God, I'm alive, and this is what like the life that I get to create right now, even if it's 2 days.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's what's important. And I think that as we move towards building that reality for people, I think that, you know, we'll start to see, you know, more of an acceptance of being vulnerable. And then the idea behind vulnerability changing. Yeah. As something that's power, like you said, as opposed to weakness.
Yeah, because like it's hurtful, right? It's a painful process to say like, here I am bearing my deepest, darkest secret. And then you get shut down or you get silenced. That's very hurtful and that's very painful. And to some people, that means like, oh, I will never experience this again.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it look like to shield myself and to protect myself and to isolate myself?
Well, it's to have heart palpitations, not be able to sleep, grinding your teeth at night. That's what it is.
Disconnecting yourself from actual real connections and emotions, you know, to like not be able to go through that. And that's not okay. That's not living.
Yeah. So I am excited. I am excited.
Me too.
I am excited about how all this is going to play out. And I'm excited, you know, for after August 30th.
Yeah,
with what happens with Belonging in the movement.
Give me a break. I'm gonna take a little break.
That's good that you said that, because I think a lot of times when people see these things, they're like, okay, we're ready. What's going on? What's next? And it's like, well, we have to.
There's definitely a plan. So,
how do we get involved? Like for people who are listening, who are like, this is so dope right now. Like I've been waiting for an opportunity to get involved with something like this. I'm listening to the show. I feel the spidey senses tingling. How do we get involved with Belonging?
I think it starts off with like contributing through like ticket purchases. Right?
Okay. That means people pull out your wallets. Okay.
Yes. Give me all your money.
Miss the Uber, the Uber ride for one day.
Rethink your Uber budget for the month of August. Okay. It's still early. We're only like very what,
early,
10 days
very
in.
Early.
But you can go to alignmentarts.eventbrite.com. And you can purchase your whatever tickets you feel so called to do so. Mm-hmm. If you're unable to attend, I usually recommend like giving a donation. There is no minimum or maximum donation to
give.
Okay,
good.
There's also an email, alignmentarts@gmail.com, if you would like to have a different conversation or a new possibility in what, you know, could potentially happen. And so I'd be the one on the other end, seeing like what that conversation looks like, or, you know, what, we could create, outside of the show. So,
and if you, for whatever reason, missed that, or you didn't feel like rewinding on the playback to get the information, you can slide up in my DM at According to RP, on Instagram. You can send me an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com. I mean, Laura is a good friend of mine. If you want me to facilitate this, you know, personal conversation or whatnot, definitely reach out.
You can also reach out to me on Instagram.
Yes. Give us your Instagram so we can slide up.
No, don't do it. I might just ignore you and report you to Instagram.
Okay, be very, so when you slide up in her DM, be very professional.
Okay, so there's two. So there is at Alignment Arts, ALIGNMENT Arts. Mm-hmm. And then my personal one, which is Laura, LauraJJACQUES. Okay. So Laura J Jax. And I'm pretty responsive. And so like, I won't ignore you as long as you're appropriate. And everything else is stated before this. And so.
All right. Cool.
Thank you.
So is there any last words that you would like to say, or any last statements you would like to make about the Belonging movement? I know we said a lot of stuff, but we want to close it off properly.
I would say that belonging is not an experience, it's a movement, right? Mm-hmm. And you get to walk in there with no judgment, no shame, and you get to just fully be in what it is. And you get to kind of like step up and level up to what it is that we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's room for toxic interactions or negativity or anything like that. But I want to say, like, you know, you get to really just like step into something that you're not used to. And I think people often same thing with like, conversations are different. Like, please, like, know that you get to be uncomfortable and vulnerable, and that's okay. You get to be messy, and we get to all just experience that together. And messy doesn't have to be negative. It can be actually a beautiful experience, and that's what I'm hoping to bring out of that. And I'm not doing this experience by myself. There's several people involved, and there's a full team in place. And so, like, I just really welcome everybody to bring, like, their parents. And, you know, I'm having people having conversations for the first time in like three generations of their family. I mean, this is real stuff happening. And I've constantly like reposted like messages that I'm getting, conversations that are happening. This is real.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's important work. And I, and it's good that you say that. Like, so even if you haven't been a victim yourself,
yes, you don't have to be,
of sexual violence, but everybody knows one person that has. So even if that person that you know does not want to come or doesn't feel comfortable, whatever, you can come and experience, you know, the movement and go back and, you know, report back and share whatever the case is. Like, you know, you don't have to be, because sometimes with these talks and events, people think that, well, if I'm not a victim, then I don't need to come.
No, that is,
and that's not what it's about. The awareness is not just about the victims. It's about, you know, prevention,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that's what's important. So thank you so much, thank Laura you. Jean-Jacques. I love saying the full names. For coming and talking about your experience and really sharing this really great movement that, you know, you've already been embarking on, but, you know, you'll be able to share with the general public on August 29th and August 30th in Brooklyn, New York. There'll be more information about that on my page. So definitely follow up and then follow, you know, Laura on her personal pages. But I really think it's important to have these types of, not just conversations, but these action items. These, like, you know, what's the next step when it comes to issues like this that are plaguing and affecting our community every single day? It's not like, oh, this happened in the 80s. Like, this is happening right now. It's been going on and still going on. So I really commend you for stepping out and really being the face of it, because you could have put this together and not be the face. You could have just said, guys, this is something I'm doing for awareness, and then that be that. But you are the face of this movement. Your story is at the forefront of this movement, and you're being vulnerable with people who you don't even know about something that a lot still feel is taboo to even speak of. Mm-hmm. So if I had the clapping machine right now, I would clap you, but I'm going to get a clapping machine, because I feel like, you know, it's worthy. But I definitely commend you for your effort, because not easy. It's hurtful. Like, you know, for somebody who's still slowly coming out with, you know, my stories, it's something that's very painful. And so for you to be like, you know what, I got to put this aside. It's bigger than me.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, it's really commendable.
And that's what I get to tell myself every day. Like, if I sit there and I focus on, like, oh, it's just my singular experience, I'll go in, you know, and I'll retreat and I'll go hide in a corner somewhere. But because it's not just about me, I can feel those emotions, but I don't get to actually act on them. Mm-hmm. Because also, like I said earlier in the conversation, it's just like, there's so much support out there.
Yeah,
there is. And it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't look like the same for everyone, but there's people out there, and I'm fortunate, very fortunate of in the age that I'm in. And no, I'm not old, but, you know, we're in our mid-30s, and you know, to have so much people say, like, oh my god, like, how can I support you? That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I think, like, we get to also look like that. People are still capable of loving us, even if the trauma is ugly.
Yeah.
Even if we might not be ourselves, you know. And This is beautiful, necessary life work.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
100%.
Yes.
All right, Laura. So thank you again so much for being on the According to RP show. I know we're going to definitely come back and do a follow-up after the event.
100%.
Because I want to, you know, I'm going to be there, but I also want to talk about, you know, highs, lows, you know, follow up on it, really, you know, deconstruct the event and everything and really talk about, you know, what went down, what was experienced.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to have
There'll
you back.
There'll definitely be more people at the table.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. We should actually maybe plan like a panel show of some sort. All right.
Yeah.
So everybody, thank you so much for tuning into another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, and have a great week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.